Hello, mate.
All right, Goose, how you going? Yeah, okay. We're fine again.
Okay.
I can hear you again. Sorry about that.
Oh, yeah.
That's all right.
How much did you...
He sorted it, yeah?
Yeah, my modem went dead.
All right.
Thoughts on it?
Yeah, I heard half of the music. Sorry, guys. I'm really sorry.
I don't know how that's all right.
I got up to answer it. My modem has been playing up. The USB cable went dead. It took ages to get it back together. how are you two?
I got a mince pie, banana cake, and a nice cup of tea.
Yeah, well, all right for some. I've been working on the recording, hasn't it?
Well, I guess this company of truth is a delicate thing, guys.
Yeah, well, you know that. Like it always was.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really true. It is true, isn't it? That's I'm flashing back now to acres of satsang evenings where people appeared to get in contact with their inner souls and smile blissfully, sometimes smile inanely.
Yeah.
But often there was a very nice feeling.
Mm. Yeah, for definite. And that's the two sides of it. I mean, I can also remember like going to satsang and hating it a lot of the time because I felt people were saying what they felt they ought to be saying rather than what they were actually feeling, and that tended to happen more at the more officially organised events. One of the reasons why I like community satsang, apart from the fact that it quite often used to be a lot more boring and dour, the satsang that was given, was it was in general a lot more honest. And I can definitely remember nights going to like official DLM nights, say at the Palace of Peace in South London or the big ones in Central London, that it didn't always happen, and it was always bloody wonderful when it did, because it was always very obvious when it was happening, and there was always a big difference between when I used to experience it. How much of that was down to my state of mind at that moment and what was actually happening, disputable.
Oh, I don't know, Hammy. I hear what you're saying, and I think it's really true. I mean, look at the difference between... look, if you ask the three of us now to start talking about Fat Cat, a certain guru of Indian descent, how much would that kill the spontaneity of this discussion between the three of us? And... I expect if we look back into the past and found what were those events where there really was a genuine warmth amongst people, I expect it would have been because people were coming from a comfortable place and talking about what was important to them and didn't feel as though they had to pay any kind of lip service or any service to any external influence. And as all three of you know, we were quite inclined to ascribe the wrong things to the guru, and also by the same token we didn't acknowledge the feelings that we had as belonging to ourselves and being specifically subjective experience. You know all of the mythology that surrounded the cult and our place in the cult. It was so encouraged that if anything positive happened, you could ascribe it to Rowett. And yet, there was something very, very real happening at the time. And I'm honestly thinking that it was communication between real people.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I've got absolutely no doubt about that. And I don't think it's any different. I mean, I think that was, I really learnt that lesson. And I mean, I've probably said this before on these shows, is that it was. I can remember one night being out on the dance floor for the first time, where something
Your
really
voice is
deep
really
happened.
Trippy.
Yeah, is it? We're still getting that real echo stuff, yeah.
Oh, it's like echoing into cosmic dimensions.
Oh right,
absolutely fabulous. We've got
this is Satsang.
We've
this
got
is the
aliens.
Satsang.
Yeah, we've got aliens invading the Satsang show tonight, and
they all want to be here. They want to be where we are.
Yeah.
Millennium Two.
Right. This is the alien dance floor with Hams and Jed and Naya. Yeah. Red radio. Yeah, yeah.
Indeed. Indeed. So it's that bad for you guys, is it? The echoing and that.
It's
starting to calm down now.
Yeah.
Yeah. What we should have done was waited a couple of minutes again. It's that whole thing with Pamela. It's about 2 minutes in and then it seems to calm down. And what exactly is going on during that 2 minutes? God only knows. I don't have a clue. It's doing sonic thunder bashing all
well,
the sound system.
Well, it's
Pamela's obviously
it's
got
the 2 minutes
problems.
Of the alien docking process.
Yeah, right. You know. You know.
I can still hear myself in the background, which is very disturbing. I'm sure that everyone else knows that horrible feeling of being forced to listen to your own voice.
Yeah, well, you were saying about that this afternoon, Jed, weren't you? About how when you listen to your own voice now on Echo, it's like listening to your father from years ago.
It's freaky, man. It's freaky.
And it's weird. Everybody who's recorded these shows, when they first listen to their voice afterwards, I don't think there's anybody that's gone, bloody hell, I sound really good on that show. When I listen to myself, I sound like a real uneducated East End yoik, which is only half true.
What you are.
Yeah, up yours. Up yours, mate. But I can see how, like, things like when I went to this wedding in the summer, and they were all, like, middle-class professionals and quite straight, really. And I can remember some of the conversations, and I could see from their reactions that was exactly the way they was reading it. And it's interesting, the way we, getting back to that thing about sound again, is that normally we hear sound through our bodies, not through our ears. We hear the resonance through our bone system. And I was having a chat with somebody about this the other day after they'd been appalled by the sound of their own voice when they'd recorded some jingles, one of the young DJs. And we got onto that whole thing about Evelyn Glennie, who, well, I don't know about now, going back a bit, she was like one of the premier orchestral percussionists on the planet. And she was completely deaf, like completely deaf, if I remember my readings. And she used to listen to the music through her stomach. And would play to it through her stomach. Because I know, and I never understood that until I went to drum and bass events, and I felt the sub bass hitting me in the stomach, and almost like, and it was billowing my stomach in and out. And it just forcibly brought home to me that whole thing about sound, it really is waves. And we absorb those waves not just through our ears, but through our whole being. I don't know what that's got to do with anything, but it always fascinates me.
Well, it is fascinating. I'd often wondered how Beethoven wrote some of his finest music at the end of his life when he was deaf.
Yeah.
But I did once spend some time with a blind woman, and she explained to me that she actually could see the colours inside her mind, and that,
right.
that she, when she went shopping for clothes, she actually felt the colours of the, and she chose the colours that she felt. And she had an absolutely exquisite dress sense. Her colour combinations were really unusual. And of course, sound waves, and of course, listening to bass is at the edge of the audible spectrum that our ears can receive.
Especially sub bass.
That's really interesting, thinking that there's overtones that obviously could be sensed by other organs. And if you're saying that this percussion said she could sense music through the stomach, that's really fascinating.
Yeah, and she was high class, Naya. She really was recognised throughout the world as probably, certainly when I was into classical music, as the premier percussionist.
I think it's time for another track, Hamson.
Yeah, well, why don't we hum... Yeah, go on.
I was just thinking, can you play one of the tracks I requested?
Indeed. Yeah, I should just sort that out now. And here we go, folks. Sitting on the Dock of the Bay by Otis Redding.
Cool. Sitting in the morning sun, I'll be sitting when the evening comes, watching the ships roll in, and then I'll watch them roll away again. Yeah, I'm sitting on the dock of the bay, watching the tide roll away. Sitting on the dock of the bay, wasting time. I left my home in Georgia, headed for the Frisco Bay. 'Cause I've had nothing to live for, and look like nothing's gonna come my way. So I'm just gonna sit on the dock of the bay, watching the tide roll away. I'm sitting on the dock of the bay, wasting time. Look like nothing's gonna change, everything still remains the same. Can't do what 10 people tell me to do, so I guess I'll remain the same. Yes. Sitting here resting my bones, and this loneliness won't leave me alone. Yes. 2,000 miles I roam just to make this dock my home. Now I'm just gonna sit at the dock of a bay, watching the tide roll away. Ooh, I'm sitting on a dock of the bay, wasting time.
What a wicked guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks,
Lionel.
That was lovely.
Oh.
Speak up, Jed. You're doing your Hippie Central thing.
Ah, is that better?
Yeah.
Okay, indeed. So I said it thanks. Is. It was really nice. Really nice song.
Yeah, this is really funny, this session, isn't it? I'm really enjoying it. It's really cool. It's really funny. The three of us kind of communicating across the planet and there's this music that's running through the central thread, and
it's lovely being able to set it up now so that people can play their own tracks as well. It's going to really open up that whole thing of doing recording. To be honest, it's going to save me a hell of a lot of editing time as well.
Yeah, good. Jed, I've got a question for you. How's your math going? I want to know. What did you do this week?
Well, I went to college. And I learnt a bit about the Poisson distribution and statistics. Also, this sofa arrived that I have to construct. And so far it's taken me 4 days. The whole thing will take me a couple of hours. So that's been the centre of my life the last few days at the moment. That's what I've been doing.
What about you, Noah?
Oh, well, I've been having a fascinating time. I'm writing this information communication technology architecture. It's about this thing called services-oriented architecture. To me, it's absolutely fascinating. The IT industry has been buzzing about services for the last couple of years, and the whole of the IT industry has been going, yep, yep, we're going to do services, yep, yep. And first of all, everyone said, it's web services. Web services is this communication technology, which means that Microsoft can talk to Java technology and everything can expose itself as a web service. And that's simply a piece of communication, a message which is wrapped in technology which will run over the IP protocol. However, it didn't solve the central problem, and the central problem was that unlike systems in IT have been trying to talk to each other for about 20 or 30 years now, see, unfortunately, with the diversity of IT systems, which started with Microsoft being a very subjective set of systems, and then every other vendor that built systems after that coming along building subjective systems which had no common interfaces. If you like, it's like having a whole bunch of people in the room that talk different languages. So we've been trying to solve that problem for the last 10 years really seriously. Finally, people came up with this idea of web services, something that would be ubiquitous and would talk from one system to another. That's all very well. It works up to a point, and it has started bridging the communication gap. But one of the accompanying problems in IT is that that to expose services, and the reason why it's interesting at all is that this is part of the way that IT services can be dished up around the planet, from system to system, from network to network, so that I could sit here and I could call up a movie service in out of Mongolia and get back what I want. Broadly speaking, that's where we're heading for. There've been some fundamental problems that web services haven't solved, and that is the organisation, classification and categorisation of all the potential services that every potential computer system on the planet can offer every other system. And I've been working on this a project for a few months to try and work out a very simple way to classify services, to expose them. And in doing so, I've had to actually, and this is the interesting part, classify exactly what have we done with IT, what have we built. And I've actually worked out a classification system for the functioning at runtime of IT technology. And this has been done several years ago for networks, but there's been a lot of attempts up to this point in time to get a successful classification system for exactly what we do with IT, and none of them have really none of them have fit. There's always been something wrong, something unclassified, and I finally cracked it in the last couple of months. So I've had a lot of fun writing a dissertation about this, which I'm about to take with me to a new client, and hopefully institute it, execute it, get it implemented, and it will help. It will help solve the problem of getting unlike to talk to unlike. Now, I know everyone else will find this absolutely phenomenally as unexciting as I find it exciting. But there you go. Takes all sorts to make a planet.
Well, indeed it does, and if it hadn't have been for IT people, we wouldn't be having this call now, even if we do get weird little echo and delay feedback stuff coming in, like right in the middle when you were talking about the problems of different systems communicating with each other.
Perfect.
I was chuckling. No, so I mean, when you obviously you sound like you get a lot of pleasure from the work that you do.
I do. If I wasn't passionate about it, I wouldn't do it. There's nothing nothing on this planet is worth doing it unless you enjoy doing it, and in fact you're passionate about it. So I'm really fortunate I've had a chance to follow my passions. I fell into IT at some point, and it was like I was made for IT. My brain works like IT. And I really enjoy it. And as my personal philosophy is, live it up and live every moment and enjoy everything that I do. And in fact, it seems to work incredibly well for me, because I've discovered that one of the universal laws is that if you do something with love and with verve and with passion, the rewards come, and that includes the behaviour of money. I had a lot of trouble with money earlier in my life until I discovered I had a Protestant guilt complex, probably caused by the fact that I went to Sunday school in early childhood and was told by working class Protestant Sunday school teachers that to be poor was good and to be rich was bad. So at some point I tossed that one away and found that money is a very joyful flow and can be a very joyful flow. And that and it is unconnected with work, and it is unconnected with anything else, and it has a life of its own. And I've been doing a lot better in the last number of years since I've discovered that the universe, it really is comprised of its own set of laws. And my best connection to the universe is joyful connection. And I find that everything works for me when I have a positive frame of mind, surprise, surprise, and that I create my own problems with any negative thoughts and expectations and limitations that I place on myself, which leads me to think, and I know I'm talking about myself, but it's really a fascinating discovery, that I think we human beings actually are in the driving seat, that if we only took the knowledge, the power, the self-knowledge that we actually do have the power to create our own lives, and that we are actually creating our lives every second. I find that really fascinating. So yeah, I'm having a great time in everything that I do. I'm having a wonderful time. I really am.
Sounds cool.
Jesus feels just like satsang.
Except that the third member's gone very quiet.
Yeah, what's happening, Jen?
I'm just listening with glazed eyes, you know.
I mean, is it weird?
Do you remember the?
Listen, guys, get those spliffs away from you.
Oh God, if only, mate, I would love to at the moment, but that ain't no dear, Jen. Yeah, no, that would be cool.
Come on, confess. Hey, it's a spliff, isn't it?
It's bouncing so all over the place now.
Is it? You're still getting all that echo and delay and stuff, yeah?
But it's such fun.
Yeah, it's cool. It's all there. It's just bouncing off whatever walls it wants to.
Now, Jen, tell us about Glastonbury. I'm absolutely fascinated. Tell us more. What do you know of Glastonbury?
Glastonbury? It's where I live. And between Glastonbury and Street, which is the next village, there's about 9,000 to 10,000 people living. There's a couple of yellow lines. Well, probably more than a couple now. And a real broad picture of society. From the far left to the far right, politically, religiously, and everything else. But there is a spirit of unification around here. There's still something above all that everyone seems to want to be part of in some way or another, and that's why I like it. That's my experience of the place. So you've got like all the differences, yet there is a unity there as well. That's what I like about Glastonbury.
Wow, and of course there's that incredible landscape, Jed, and the tour.
Oh, the tour. Oh, yeah. Beautiful walks and hills and all sorts of things. It's nice going up the tour early in the morning and find like 100 cows up there as well.
Making the pilgrimage?
No, just feeding in the morning, and they go right up to the tour, right up to the top.
Right.
Oh yeah, it's very magic.
Oh
place.
No,
very
I've never nice. Seen them anything but low down there.
If you go really early in the morning, it's a bit awesome actually. Suddenly you're surrounded by these enormous animals, and they are enormous when you're right next to them. And you're in their grazing area at that point, you know. But I've never heard of anyone having an accident. But it's an awesome, awesome experience.
For anyone who has not been to Glastonbury, it, I have to believe in the magic of place. It is such a magical place. It's a landscape of great age, and I don't know whether it was volcanic or glacial or what, but there are folds of land. I don't even know whether it's geological folds, but anyway, there's land that's been pushed up. I believe that the area was once a seabed, an internal sea, at some point in its vast ancient history. It is one of those landscapes that is steeped in magic and history, and it's palpable. You can feel it, and I'm sure everyone knows what I mean. I'm sure everyone's been to some kind of place on this planet where it's awesome just to be there, and Glastonbury is one of those places. I don't know whether any of the New Age theories about why some places are more magical than the others are correct. I don't know. I have no idea, but it's so true. Some places you go to, you can just feel an atmosphere that's just amazing.
Yeah, and it's Avalon, actually. So everyone should send their donations in now.
In brown envelopes. In brown envelopes.
Oh, brown envelopes. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Of your own with volition. No, your own volition.
Yeah, and definitely not named checks.
Well, I think it's apt that the one member of Satsang who is living in the awesome mystical place of Glastonbury comes across with an echoey shiver to his voice.
And I'm going to suggest we go into a track now, if you guys are up for that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure.
It's by a new psychedelic band called Grails, and the track's called Lord, I Hate Your Day. Gentle track off that album. It's called The Burden of Hope, and I'm just really loving that album at the moment.
That's a gorgeous you guys. Track, Hansen.
Yeah, it's just some wicked stuff on that.
Circles in Ireland.
Yeah, well, that's why. Yeah, that's exactly why I was getting the bus to put that one on. Then, to be honest,
sounded a bit like Greensleeves in the beginning.
Yeah. Yeah, it's got that whole very I've got to check them out about them. I mean, I've got the album, but I haven't really read anything up on them yet, and they do sound very English to me, the tracks. And the album's called The Burden of Hope, which is an interesting title as well.
Ooh, isn't it?
Yeah, indeed.
That hope is Hope springs eternal, and that hope doesn't bring you an end. Hope is the means. Mm.
Yeah, it's an interesting.
And hope is a burden.
Mm. Well, yeah, I know. I mean, personally, as a Zen Buddhist, I don't relate to hope at all. I just find it a very odd word. But I think I can kind of get where they're coming from. Just in terms of, I'm assuming, just in terms of, like, you're trying to be optimistic, you're trying to go out there. Pretty much everybody knows that if you're going out there in a negative frame of mind, you're not going to have such a good time. But also the other side of the coin is it's very easy to get into that New Age thing where you just switch off from all the suffering, all the pain that anybody who's going through suffering and pain is going through suffering and pain because of their own karma or whatever. And it's very easy to distance yourself from that. I could be completely wrong. That might be absolutely not why they chose that as the title for the album at all. But
interesting theory, nonetheless. There is definitely a need to be accurate in hope. Be accurate in any kind of attitude to this life, really, because we do have a tendency to self-delusion. And, I guess... I'm thinking back a long way now, because it's a long time since I felt unconnected with my own subjective patterns of hope, I suppose. I seem to be talking about myself a lot, don't I? It's the only thing I know about. Definitely one has to accept that everything one does in one's life is one's own making. And I really can't help feeling that hope creates some kind of trajectory through which I can travel in the future. I did wonder about the nature of hope for a very long time. There's an amazing Australian poem called Past Karen, which is the story of a woman in the 1800s who, beset by drought, all the problems of the outback, all the problems of being a white settler's life, in a life that's very hostile. Written by an Australian poet called Henry Lawson, I think. And it expressed despair absolutely incredibly. Made me wonder about the nature of hope. It made me, for a long time, quite bitter about the nature of hope, thinking that, well, what is not hope something very mocking when so many of the situations that I see in this life are so desperate? But I don't think so anymore. I really do think that hoping against hope is... and that's something I was thinking about last week, hoping against hope. What an amazing phrase, hoping against hope. Almost as though, are we adversarial with our hopes? are we fighting a battle with somebody else's hopes? I don't know. It's kind of interesting, isn't it? But I do think that hope is a really good thing. I think it's like... I've even began believing in fairies again. I've decided... I really have, and I'm quite honest now, that I decided I would believe in fairies, simply because if there was any truth at all to the fact that fairies will only exist if you believe in them, then I'll believe in them, because what have I got to lose? I'd much rather believe in fairies. And in fact, in this village, they have an annual festival called La Nuit des Fées, which is the Night of the Fairies. And we all have a really great big fantastic party in the village, stay up really late and get really drunk. And remember that in the mountains here are many, 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 many fairies. That's a true story. I mean, we really do have a night of the fairies here. Anyway, so I decided that I would believe in fairies simply because if they are real, then they want me to believe in them. And what have I got to lose? Anyone else believe in fairies? Hansen? Jeff?
I'm not going to tell you.
I definitely don't believe in fairies, but then I also tend not to believe in anything, and that's the whole Zen side of my nature, is that I acknowledge the fact that optimism is crucial. Having been through periods where I was really down and seen the whole nature of depression, I really see that it's important that you have a positive outlook as much as possible. But beyond that, I don't think I have any belief system at all. Well, certainly not that I'm consciously aware of, apart from that, the stuff that I was saying earlier about maybe there is some quantum connection, but it's not even really a major belief system for me for that. It's almost an irrelevance. I'm just rather prosaic in that regard and just deal with what's here and that's it.
Well, that's pretty reasonable.
Oh, so you've never seen a fairy then?
No, I've never seen a fairy. And the only time I ever got any close to seeing anything like that that produced that kind of response was once on coming down from acid about 35 years ago. And we went for... We used to all trip as a group then in those days. And we'd go off into the countryside after we'd done the whole internal journey that in those days acid used to last about 15 hours really intensely. And then we'd all go off to the fields in the morning when we were starting to come down. And I walked out into this field, and just as the sunrise was... I mean, it must have been up a little while, but it was that really early morning light when it's really beautiful. And all I could see were thousands of butterflies all around me in the most wonderful fluorescent psychedelic colours. And, well, I must admit, it was quite beautiful. And I've never seen anything like that in my life since, or anything remotely close to. And it was the only time that ever happened on acid as well, like that out in nature. It must be lovely to believe in stuff like that.
Well, it's easy. All you have to do is believe in it. Actually, I'm getting really self-conscious now, and I'm thinking about
the
all the reckless boys.
I know.
Listen to my stuff, and I always knew that that Australian idiot was.
Yeah.
No, look,
but that's cool. So they can pitch in.
With metaphysical theories. I mean,
yeah.
The thing is that I know that I've come across. I'm conscious of the way I come across on the forum, the forums. There's that word again. Sometimes because I've expressed views which are definitely not mainstream. The point is, I just feel that we should hold ideas and views as possibilities until they're logically proven untrue. And I honestly do have an astrologer. Now I'm going to be burnt for witchcraft, I know. The thing is that I do think that this world is more than meat and potatoes and boy games and politics and girls get babies and get maternal and grow up and get married. And, you know, I really do think that we create our own roles in this life and that we can easily be bound and often are by the stereotypes of our gender, our society, our class, our education. And I really, really have no desire whatsoever to be bound by anything. And I feel that I can hold whatever hypothesis I like, as long as I know it's a hypothesis. And that once I've disproved it, I toss it away. In fact, I think that was why I was so lucky escaping fairly mentally unscathed from the cult. Because when I actually chose to link up with the Divine Light Mission and the Miraji thing, I had previously thought that Rawat was a fake, and I was in a difficult position in my life, and I decided that for my own mental health I would take the hypothesis that he was not a fake and that what he was saying was true, and then I would explore it. I would be open. I am a bit sorry that it took me that long to disprove my hypothesis, But of course, it was always a hypothesis, and I was always trying to prove or disprove it. The point was that his PR efforts and the efforts of Alain Vital to present him as a marketing image of the terribly busy saintly guru who hops around the world spreading this incredible knowledge which was going to spread peace in our time, which was the overt and covert message put out by Alain Vital and anyone else, was very difficult to disprove because I could not get close enough to the man to see through the marketing hype. And the very, very moment that I got close enough, which was stumbling into a major donor conference in Arizona and seeing what a bunch of wets would pay a lot of money to walk past the feet of this very ordinary looking human being, and the very moment that I saw that the content of this program was a training course that was something out of Dr. Goebbels' manual for making good little German citizens, there was my hypothesis disproved. So the technique worked for me, and it was a very tough nut to crack, as I say, because all of those years where I tried to find out what was going on at Amaru and completely failing, because after all that, why would a working class boy from India make so good in the West without some incredible, incredible technique? And what is his technique? It's a soft sell. The soft sell of, no, you can't have this, or I will not define this for you, leaving it to the imagination of the people to define what knowledge was, what premis were, what truth was, what satsang was. Very, very clever. And of course he didn't have a fucking clue, pardon my Greek, German, French or whatever. That really taught me one of life's greatest lessons. So in a way, I suppose I have to be grateful for Rawat for doing that, because the very fact that you could never pin down the man and the message, you could not analyse it to the point of proving or disproving it, to me was one of the great lessons of my life, that I actually managed to get to a point where I narrowed down the options, fake or biggest saint of all time, and managed to come up with the right answer in the long run. Anyway, that was a long raid, wasn't it? That was a bit of satsang coming out of me. But I mean, I'm absolutely constantly amazed when I see the intelligence level and the wit and wisdom that comes out of the people who read the forum and write on the forum. And there has to be a very, very good reason that so many bright people were taken in by such a scam. And I think that's the one. It was the fact that it was a mastery of soft sell that we all fell for.
Yeah, indeed.
What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I also think that across the board, I mean, I'm sure I'm not misremembering this, but the average IQ level of cult members is about 10 points above the national average around the world. And this came up on another forum that I'm on recently, because there was a whole discussion going on about motivational speakers, which is rather apposite, bearing in mind the way he's developing his career at the moment. And some people were quite keen on motivational speakers, and there were others who were very anti, not because they'd come from a cult environment, although that was obviously my input. But it's that whole thing about intelligence, and yeah, you can be above average on the bright level, but actually you might not be above average on emotional intelligence. And I'm thinking of a couple of mates who I can remember taking to see videos of Raji, and, well, they just came out just completely bemused. To them, the guy was so obviously a scam. In fact, one of them to this day still talks about him as being a used car salesman. And he said his whole technique of selling was not even that of a good used car salesman. It was that of no more than a mediocre used car salesman. And I found it quite fascinating in a way, because that guy was came from a very different, much more pragmatic working class background, but then I also came from quite a pragmatic working class background, and I didn't see that at all. I just picked up on the vibe behind and completely missed all of that stuff that was going on the surface for a long, long time. And I mean, I don't know, Jed, I mean, because from really, in terms of the three of us, you were the one that was completely in there much more than us, and I was just wondering what your take is on all of this, and for yourself.
Jed?
Well, I think Jed's gone off. And we might be having a techie problem there again.
Wandering off into the Glastonbury.
Can you hear me? Hello?
Yeah, no, we're back now. Yeah, did you catch the question, Jed?
Yeah. What happens is, if one of you were talking, I mute my microphone, so my moving about doesn't come through.
Ah, right.
So you missed my first 5 minutes.
yeah, indeed I did.
Now.
I was just thinking why and how I felt when I got knowledge, and it just seemed the most perfect thing to me at that time in my life, and when I actually got initiated and got my mind blown, whatever you want to call it, you know, it was totally focused on the man himself. I remember in the knowledge session we had to bow down to his picture where he's wearing a crown and make these long vows, and to me it was like, I'm doing, this is God. You know, there was never any question in my mind that he is God. He was God, you know, just right from the beginning. Quite strange, really, because I come from a Jewish background, so all my God concepts have got nothing to do with any human being. And here it was. You know, this is how it worked for me. This is, here it was. And he even knows the secret name of God. Do you remember it was called the Holy Name then? Of course you remember. And it fitted right into the mystical side of Judaism for me, which always tells the story of there being a master who can reveal the name of God that cannot be spoken. So all from the, if you like, the spiritual side, that's how it all fitted together for me. And I, quite honestly, I really loved the colourful part of all the Hinduism in there. I really like going to holy festivals, and you know, that was a whole different side of spirituality or religion that I just hadn't seen before. And you're right, we never really did listen to the words. The fact he was a used car salesman, because we would just take it up with something else. And I caught him on Sky recently. There's this open access channel. He's sometimes on after I Love Lucy or something like that. And I made myself sit and watch it, you know. And he was speaking in the same way. It was the same person. Yeah, I just wasn't transfigured this time. I wasn't mesmerized. I don't know whatever the word is. And I actually listened to the words that he was saying, you know. And he wasn't saying anything. He never actually says anything, you know. It's a bit like that time on the, I don't know, when the Catweasel mob were out. I was trying to find out, when they were calling themselves students, I was saying, please tell me one thing he has taught you. And I'd be accused of wanting an intellectual pop. You know, I was just trying to understand why, you know, there was actually nothing there. So I don't know if that answers your question about how I feel and how I see it. I don't know how I got in so deep. In my beliefs. You know, I used to believe he was behind everybody's eyes and all that sort of stuff. And for a while it was real for me. I'd see him everywhere, all that sort of stuff, you know.
Wow, that's amazing, Jed, because of course the beauty and the truth and the longing and the love was you all along. But of course we do get brought up in a very alienating way in this culture not to acknowledge our own divinity, if you like. I mean, that's probably going to have everyone cringing. Just the words, own divinity? But it's true. We are part of this creation, and I've come to see it in a way that we're almost like these little synapses, these little nerve endings of creation. And I do have a very, very profound sense of awe and wonder for whatever in this, for this universe itself. I mean, God knows whether there's any God or not. I've absolutely no idea, and I'm not going to spend any time trying to personify the energy of this universe. But gee, when I try to figure out my own place in it, I do feel like I'm part of something cosmic, something grand. And it makes sense to me when I do recognize that maybe I'm just an extension of something grand. You know, I'm starting to think of object-oriented theory in computing, whereby objects have attributes. Maybe I'm an attribute.
I used to teach that, you know.
Did you, Jed?
Object-oriented analysis and design, yeah.
Ha. Oh, it'll come back to you.
I doubt it. Anyway, that's not... I loved it when it went from procedural stuff to object-oriented.
Me too. I loved it. Absolutely. It
totally much more earth, less sequential, less hierarchical, you know. And much more real world.
And much more democratic.
Yeah, making objects, man. Giving them some power, some not... Yeah, it's cool, isn't it? You know C++?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, I used to teach that as well many years ago.
My goodness, you've got some real reconstruction to do, Jed. I'm really looking forward to having more IT discussions with you.
Oh, it'll take a while. I'm only just getting my head sort of back there again, you know. But and I'm not really up on the latest stuff.
Well, don't worry, because things haven't progressed all that far. Well, the new generation, the under 30s, are still reinventing every wheel that we invented in the 90s.
Oh, right.
And they're backtracking to the 80s as well. And they're doing it all procedurally because people are finding it very difficult to think, to solve problems with objects in as grand a manner as one can with procedural type methodologies or languages. And so a lot of people have reverted to doing procedural type analysis and programming, really. And that's a shame. But you can see that it is quite a quantum leap to try to solve problems using object languages in as big a chunk as we were able to procedurally. I'm trying to train my brain in that direction, and We'll see where it all goes. Sorry if this is making absolutely no sense to anyone who isn't an IT zealot.
I'm groping. and I do have a little bit of background, although much, much lighter than you guys. But, I mean, as soon as I hear object-oriented, I just think of circularity and the stuff I read on second order cybernetics, which always made complete sense to me on an intuitive level, but I would never be able to describe it verbally. But that's as far as I went, really.
Well, think about it this way, Hamson. Supposing that procedurally we're able to get in a car and drive across London, and we would stagger our way through the streets, and if we sort of kept the sun in view or the river on one side or something, eventually we might end up to where we were going. Well, we would. But the way you could solve things objectively is if you actually got your street maps, your classification systems, and your tuned into your news service of traffic flows and traffic plans in London at this very point in time, and then you use some very clever analysis to work out first, before you hopped in the car, a route to get from where you were to the other side of London, taking into account the street plans, the one-way streets, all the traffic flows, the fact that central London can be closed off, and the current traffic position. That's where we're trying to go.
Right.
And so many times people just hop in their car and set off. And of course, you know the results. You're familiar with London.
Yeah, indeed. Average traffic speed of 3 miles an hour now, which is lower than it was in 1894.
Well, it's too true. For an experiment one day, I decided to drive from East London to West London. And it did take me 5 hours.
Yeah, I'm not really surprised.
That was several years ago.
Yeah. Mm. And it's worse now, and it's getting worse by the year. We're starting to get two or three gridlocks a year, where the whole of London just grinds to a halt, literally the whole of London. I think they're putting a lot of effort into the whole traffic lighting systems to integrate it and kind of alleviate those kind of problems, but we've still got more and more traffic coming on the road on a very small country. I don't see any improvement at all.
I see it getting worse every time I go there.
No, indeed.
Certainly we need some answers to those solutions.
Indeed.
Some solutions to those problems. GPS and tracking and computers in every car is going to be the start of the answer to driving in England.
Indeed. Well, folks, I don't know about you guys, but that's quite a good little session we've recorded there.
It's been wonderful. I've got dinner guests waiting in the lounge. I should go and entertain them.
Indeed. Indeed. And I was wondering, Jed, if maybe you would just like to wind it up by playing another track, if you've got anything that you fancy playing.
Okay, I can do a nice from East of the River Ganges by Youth. Here we go. The Kumbh Mela.
And catch you guys all soon.
Yeah.
Catch you soon, guys.
Yeah, bye.
Bye, bye.
All the energy you want.
Even space girls know you get a big delight in every bite. Delicious hostess cream coat. Thank you.
Space out of this world.